Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. I'm your host, Christina Frazier. This week's conversation continues the All Souls Forum quarter-century tradition of hosting the annual State of the City address, tonight with Mayor Sly James. The mayor will cover the city's accomplishments and challenges from the last year and detail his plans for Kansas City's future. This show is recorded on January 21st at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church here in Kansas City, Missouri. Our show's format begins with our speaker's presentation and then concludes with the question and answer part of the program. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's join the conversation here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
Morning, I'm Michael Duffy, a member of the All Souls UU Forum. Welcome. This morning, I'm honored to have Mayor Sly James come and deliver his annual State of the City address. The mayor is in his final year of his term, his second term as mayor of Kansas City.
Well, I think Michael's trying to get rid of me a little early. I've got 18 and a half months, Michael. Don't be throwing me out any earlier than I need to go, all right? Good morning, everybody. How you doing today? Good. Let me start by thanking you for inviting me to join you here today. You know, each year we gather and reflect on the past year and what's going to come in the next year. We celebrate our successes, but we also need to address our challenges and discuss our failures. It's through this realistic and, I believe, hopefully honest self-assessment that we can begin to appreciate the complexity of the issues facing the city. We learn what works, we learn what doesn't work, and we find ways to adapt and improve. As a Marine, I was taught a very basic motto: improvise, adapt, and improve. And let me assure you that in this job, is improvise, adapt, and overcome. And in this job, I've had to do a lot of improvising, adapting, and hopefully overcoming. We do this because we know it's important for us to continue to move this city forward. It's what separates us from other levels of government. And we don't just pass laws or make policies out of the blue. We collect and analyze relevant facts and data with an eye towards creating sustainable solutions, with a key emphasis on the word sustainable solutions. Once we're satisfied that we've selected the right approach and it's based on sound reasoning and on sound grounds, we take the time to make sure that it's working, and if it needs to be tinkered with or adjusted, we make those adjustments in order to improve. It's not about checking off boxes on a list of campaign promises for short-term political goals. That's not what this is about. Local government cannot operate that way. It's really about moving our city forward with sustainable solutions to chronic problems that plagued the city for far too long. And it's about giving our staff the freedom, the absolute freedom, and the encouragement to improvise without fear of failure. If they are afraid to fail because of some consequence, then they simply will do what is expected and nothing more. And we can't have that. We need our staff to improvise and to innovate. And it's in this way that we refuse to simply accept the status quo. It's also in this way that we stand up and demand more for our city. So today I want to take a look at a few aspects that enable a city to rise and to realize its potential. For 6.5 years, we have been investing in our youngest resident, our children, to ensure that they can lead healthy and prosperous lives. And it all starts before they leave the womb. I'm proud to say that our city is leading the way in creating family-friendly work environments and workplaces that will benefit the smallest of our residents. We know that paid parental leave lowers parental stress, and lowering parental stress has a positive impact on young children and on fetuses. And it has an impact on the families once those babies are born because they are able to bond quicker with less stress and turmoil. It also provides more opportunities for families to bond immediately after birth without having to worry about whether or not they're going to be able to make the bills because they've had to use up all their vacation or leave time in order to have the baby and stay home. It's been a priority for me and a priority for a number of Kansas City businesses like CBiz and the Lockton Company and McCown Gordon, which have been lauded by the program When Work Works. It's an organization that really does advocate and promotes family-friendly workplace policies. And our efforts really just don't stop there. We also engage in quality early learning, both in home and in preschool, because it's essential to get all of our children, every single one, ready for kindergarten. Through the initiative I started in 2011, Turn to Page KC, we have highlighted campaigns like Talk, Read, and Play with Your Child Every Day, a situation that is necessary in order for parents to be educated about the need to talk and read and play with their children every day, to eliminate and close a 30 million word gap. That's 30 million words, and that's the difference in the amount of words, the number of words that a child growing up in poverty hears compared to a child in more stable and better economic circumstances. And that's in the first 3 years of life. So if you can imagine what those 30 million words mean going forward, vocabulary, socialization, kindergarten readiness, all of those things wrapped up in those first 3 years of life. 30 million fewer words for our children's poor children is really unacceptable, and we really have to work on eliminating those types of things. It should be no surprise to anybody that things don't just start when you're 18, 19, 20. They start before you're born. They start with the family environment. They start with the home. They start with how you're socialized as a young baby. All of this is important to the central focus of Turn to Page KC, to work towards a goal of having every single child, regardless of race, regardless of zip code, regardless of socioeconomics, being able to be a proficient reader by the time that they leave third grade. Because one thing that we do know, you learn to read up to third grade, and from third grade on, you're reading to learn. So if you haven't learned to read, you're not going to be learning much. So there's no surprise, is there, that a huge majority of our people in prison, most of whom are black and brown, are fourth grade level readers. When you can't read and you can't learn and you're having problems in school, then you're going to have problems with the law in a lot of instances because you lose hope and you lose options. So I'm really proud to say that since 2011, we've increased our third grade reading proficiency in Kansas City from 33% in 2011 to 55% in 2017. We are still below our goal of 70%, and we're still below the state average of 62%, and there are still very real and demonstrable social, economic, and racial disparities that impact those issues. But we're closing the gap. We're getting more third grade reading students to be proficient readers. And one thing that we've learned time and time and time again is you can't do it alone. And we didn't do this alone. We did it by working with a number of great organizations like Lead to Read and the United Way to help achieve our third grade reading goals. And students who don't finish third grade reading proficiently will face a higher risk of unemployment, higher risk of incarceration, shorter life expectancy, lower earnings, and all sorts of other attendant problems. So we're not simply talking about students passing a test here. We're talking about students developing the skills to be in our future workforce, to create businesses, to create jobs, and to simply survive in an increasingly technologically oriented and based world. When we invest in our families, children are more likely to be ready for kindergarten. They're more likely to be able to achieve third grade reading proficiency. They're more likely to graduate from high school. They're more likely to get jobs. They're more likely to become contributing citizens and to raise happy, healthy, and successful families of their own. And when those things happen, the city is improved as a direct result. This is one of those sustainable solutions to a chronic problem that will indeed have long-term impacts and effects on our community in things like reducing crime. So I need to tell you that we had 2017, we had 149 people murdered in Kansas City. 149. That number makes me angry. It should make everybody angry. And I can tell you, last night when I got home at 12:58, I got a call from the chief of police, my second of the day. The first one was about a shooting of a young woman out south. This call was worse call that we've had in a long time. People driving in cars, driving down the street, shooting at each other, and killing a five-year-old. Now, I can tell you, I don't think many of us get those calls, but I do. I had two yesterday, and I'll have more going forward. And I had a bunch last year. And the chief and I were talking, and we both said, what the hell do we do about this? How do we stop people from driving in cars, shooting guns at each other? It's not about the number of police. Unless you put a cop in every car, you ain't going to stop that. The other earlier incident was inside an apartment, two or three people and guns. Then somebody got shot in the face. How do you stop that? Can't put a cop in every apartment. This is something that this entire community has to take on. I get to visit murder scenes after murder scenes. I get to stand there and watch parents fall on the ground in agony when they find out a child is killed, or to see angry adults because somebody shot them or shot somebody in their family. I get to see that corrosive element of violence on this community all the time, and I get to see it up close and personal. It tears families apart. It fosters distrust amongst us, fosters distrust amongst our neighbors, fosters distrust with the police. It diminishes our ability to succeed in every way. And we all deserve to live in a safe environment in which we can thrive. But it takes a community of citizens to stand up, to work together with elected leaders and law enforcement to stop this cancer of violence. 2018 hopefully can be the year that our neighborhoods see true relief from the violence, but it's going to require Kansas Cityans to truly prioritize crime as an issue that they want to see reduced. All of us in this community must accept the responsibility to stand up and speak out against violence. When you see something, say something. And that's a problem. I don't care how many police we have. They can't be everywhere. And when people know what's going on, when they know who did it, and they don't say, then let me just say this. They need to stop calling me and asking me what I'm going to do about it. Because when you have the authority and the ability and the power to do something about it by simply saying something, then that's on you. That's on the individual. And we don't do nearly enough of that. That's one of the reasons why KCPD has increased its tips hotline reward to $5,000 this year. We have some evidence that increasing the reward might stimulate more conversation. So we're going to do that. And while we make that ask of our communities, we'll do and continue to do whatever we can to address the many factors that lead to violence in this city. We've already talked about education. We'll talk about some other things. We have faced a severe disadvantage in dealing with gun violence in this city by being able to control the instrumentality of death, the gun. We've been unable to have any regulations whatsoever about how guns are used, who can have guns, and those types of circumstances in this city. We are even unable to pass an ordinance that says if your gun is stolen, you have to report it to the police. But we do know that a lot of these crimes and a lot of violence is committed with stolen weapons. They're stolen out of cars. Why? Because now everybody's got a gun. They leave them in bathrooms loaded. They leave them in their cars on the seat. They leave them in the trunks of their cars. They carry them in their waistbands in their businesses and walk into the bathroom, forget they left it, and have to come back a couple hours later to find their gun. But we can't touch it. Can't do anything about it. So when people start talking to me about how violent Kansas City is and how violent St. Louis is and how Chicago and New York have reduced their gun violence and homicides, then I want to tell them a couple things. Number one, look at the laws in the state of Missouri versus the laws in New York and Chicago and Illinois on guns, and tell me that when we do things that put more guns on the street and they're doing things to take more guns off the street, that those things don't have a make a difference. So we're focusing on some data-driven strategies and trying to provide some comprehensive social services in order to address this issue on different levels. Through the continued collaboration of multiple agencies with KC Nova, Kansas City No Violence Committee, we have continued to employ a focused deterrent strategy that is related and focused on group-related crime, and we use multiple tactics to get that. We've utilized that data and shared that data and analysis tool with our partners, and we use it to target Kansas City's most violent, most dangerous actors. And that has actually resulted in a decrease in group-related crimes. The things that you might call gangs has actually decreased in terms of the violence. What we see now are these runoff things, people shooting in cars, driving by each other, people playing with guns in apartments, a father and a son having an argument over a football game after having a little bit too much alcohol and somebody gets shot. Somebody's messing around with somebody else's wife or girlfriend and somebody gets shot. Some kid thinks his girlfriend's been disrespected on Twitter or Facebook, or some woman thinks her son or boyfriend has been disrespected on Facebook or Twitter, and they go shoot somebody. It's not normal activity, and it's not all gang activity. We're focused on that. It's the other stuff, the domestic violence. Those are the things that are driving some of these numbers. We've had a decrease in group-related violence since NOVA began in 2013, but it's not enough. What we're also trying to do is trying to give people a path out of crime. And right now we have Casey NOVA advocates working for their clients, about 100 people, who want to better themselves and contribute to this community in a positive way. We offer them access to job training, mental health support, substance abuse support. If they need a driver's license, we try to help them get it. If they need a place to live, try to help them get it. They need a Social Security card, try to help them get it. Try to be a concierge and open doors for them to get those things that they need so there's no more excuses. And then we try and help them get started on their feet. And so far, we've had some great success with doing that. We're also working preventatively. The Casey NOVA's Teens in Transition program, led by my office and the Jackson County Prosecutor, Gene Peters Baker, every year we bring 40 at-risk youths into the arts tech community, where they spend the summers learning conflict resolution skills. They undergo job training. They attend art therapy. They are paid minimum wage to show up. They are required to be on time and to be present in the moment. And I can tell you, I go at the beginning and I greet the kids when they're standing there, and they all have their arms crossed like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to do anything with you guys. I don't trust you. And at the end, you see there, they're having fun with the officers. They've learned to work together. They've created art together. They create friends together. And as a direct result of that program, we have information and some data that leads us to indicate that they have 66% fewer negative contacts with police than before they came. So we know the program is working. It's working to the extent that we're now trying to expand it into the south part of the city, and we're trying to expand some of the versions year-round in schools. In a similar vein, KCPD has secured funding to embed a social worker in every patrol station. It started to rely more on collecting and analyzing data. We place a greater emphasis on increasing the diversity in the police force. I had a conversation yesterday with some folks, and we were talking about the residency rule in Kansas City, where fire, police, city workers are required to live in the city if they're going to work for the city or the police department or the fire department. A lot of controversy, a lot of people in those positions would rather live elsewhere. And I have one very basic rule. If you can't live in the city that you're policing, then you shouldn't be policing in the city that you live. I don't want people running around this city carrying guns, policing people, but don't really like the city enough to actually live there themselves. That's called Ferguson, and we're not having that. So based on our crime statistics and community feedback, we've been trying to take some very measurable steps to address the factors that lead to the higher violence in this city. 2018 has to be the year that we commit to getting off the top 10 most dangerous cities list. And I'll tell you what, I know that the chief and I and everybody associated with us is committed to doing everything that we can to make that happen, but we simply cannot do it if the citizens don't do something to help us. Now, we're doing some other things too. We've made some serious investments in our infrastructure. This past year, Kansas Cityans stepped up to invest in the future of this city And in April, Kansas City voters approved the largest infrastructure package in the history of this city, with $800 million of general obligation bonds over a 20-year period, and the GO bond issue, as we referred to it then. What we approved was $600 million for roads, streets, and bridges and sidewalks, $150 million for flood control, which leveraged $535 million in federal funds, $50 million for buildings and for ADA compliance and an animal shelter. And by the end of this month, we have already started to make some serious headway on over 20 of the projects on a very long list of infrastructure needs, including Turkey Creek Flood Control Project, which will prevent catastrophic flooding along Southwest Boulevard, which I'm very happy about, wish we had done it before. That's where my daughter, thinking that she could drive a Nissan through standing water, found out that that water was up to the doors of her car, had to climb out the roof. The good news is she wasn't hurt. Bad news is the car was destroyed. And then the good news is that the insurance company paid her and she went out and got a Jeep. So these projects repair our infrastructure, something that we definitely need. It ensures our residents and businesses that we're going to do those things necessary to provide them with safe, efficient places to work, play, and thrive. And by the way, we're not just making repairs here. What we're doing is we are continuing to build a foundation for the future. What we do today, we want to last for 100 years, kind of like some of the piping in the city. When you pull out mains that have 1889 stamped on it, I'm happy they lasted this long, but it's time to get some new stuff in there. We also are working with PIAC. We took another step forward with investing in infrastructure with the city's council's unanimous vote to ask voters to renew the PIAC funding for an additional 20 years. This renewal will fund PIAC, the Public Improvements Advisory Committee, that oversees the citizen-driven process that decides how to spend tens of millions of dollars on neighborhood improvements divided equally between the six city council districts. There's a portion of PIAC money that is set aside for the city to do funds. 25% of the city's portion is used for street overlay. The other 40 is used for separate projects. And I can tell you that one of the things that the project that PIAC funds will be used for in the coming years, if this passes, is we have got to replace the Buck O'Neill Bridge. The only option to replacing the Buck O'Neill Bridge is for the state to spend a mere $50 million to repair it and close it for 2 years. We can't have that bridge closed for 2 years. 44,000 cars travel over that bridge every day. It is the main artery into downtown Kansas City. Closing it for 2 years would not only be disastrous in terms of productivity in the downtown region, it would also stress the other areas of the other bridges getting into downtown Kansas City. So traffic would be disadvantaged and a lot of things would change. So we have to raise $200 million. State will come up with $100. We have to come up with another $100. The communities surrounding Kansas City have been very good about helping. They understand the value because it's important to them as well, and they're foregoing funds that they could normally get through the MARC process from the federal government to the tune of $40 million. And the PIAC funds will help us raise another $60 over a period of 5 years to replace that bridge. And that's a tough sell in some ways, but it's absolutely essential. It's critical to the city's future to use the PIAC funds because it will enable us to maintain what we're building through the GO bonds. The GO bonds will be to fix things and to do things, and the PIAC funds will be used to maintain those things so that we don't find ourselves in another 25 or 30 years $6 billion behind in infrastructure investment. So I'm looking forward to seeing you all on the campaign trail, and I'm pretty sure that you'll all be excited to see yet another mailer with this face on it. Won't be too many more. You might want to frame that one or do something else with it. I don't know how you feel about it. One of our biggest projects, of course, is the KCI single terminal project. Now, that's been a fun thing. For 6 years, we've been arguing and talking about this. We finally got a vote of 75%, 76% of the people in this city said, we want a new single terminal. And I was extremely happy to see that. A little surprised by the margin, but very happy to see it. Now we have to get through all the nonsense, all the politics, all the hogs wanting to belly up to the billion-dollar trough and suck out what they can, and to do it any way they can. We got these robocalls going out there saying all sorts of nasty stuff. Now, let's ask this question. Who do we think's doing that? It sure as heck ain't the city. I assure you it's not Edgemore. But somebody has some interest here. Here's my job. My job is very simple. I need to keep the city council focused on getting an MOU done so we can move forward. We need to go ahead and break ground on this year. And we need to get moving. And we need to get past the politics, past the nonsense, and get this job done. 76% of the people in this city said build a new single terminal. I'm not going to stand around and watch other people try to mess with the process in such a way that it benefits them and doesn't fulfill the promise that we made to you. In my mind, the promise of building that terminal for this city is paramount, not making sure that everybody who wants to belly up can do so. There's plenty to go around, and if we all act normal and nice, we can get some. But we're not going to do it by trying to elbow other people out of the way in order to get our way. That is unacceptable. We're still on track to break ground this year and to start construction that's going to create a ton of jobs for people and to lead to even more opportunities for this city. One of the things that hurt us with the Amazon project, which I'm not upset about one way or the other, I learned a long time ago, I don't worry about things that I don't get. I'm just grateful for the things that we do have. When I was a practicing lawyer and we were forced to go through beauty contests for people who wanted to see which law firm they wanted to hire, who would give them the better deal, you know, there's only so far you can go with that. And I never cried about a case I didn't get. And I'm not going to cry about Amazon not coming here because that's a double-edged sword. But we found out some things. One of the things we found out was they weren't doing that with our airport in its current condition. We knew that. We need a university that's in the middle of the city, a big research university like the other cities that they did select have. We need mass transportation improvements in public transit. And we need more tech people here. We need to create more tech opportunities and better job opportunities. And it certainly didn't help us to have some of the other things going on. We've already started to see some of the fruits of our efforts with Iceland Air coming here. It's interesting because the people at the airport on the aviation department have been trying to reach out to Iceland Air and others for a year or two, trying to get them to come here. Nope, 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 ain't doing it, no way, no how. Iceland Air called them the day after the election and said, hey, what do we need to do? So in addition to make it easier to go see the Northern Lights, which, by the way, they would love to have everybody go see the Northern Lights. This flight is going to create a direct channel from Kansas City to Europe and make it much easier for our Kansas City businesses to do their business overseas and for international businesses to come to Kansas City. And just like this flight, our new terminal is going to help Kansas City and see more of the world, but I really want the world to see more of Kansas City. And speaking of great ways that you can see our city, you can't do much better than what our streetcar's done. Another battle. You know, some of the people who were dead set against the streetcar now walking around telling people it was their idea from the start. That's all right. Don't care about who gets the credit. Just care about getting the job done. Our continued commitment to infrastructure and the will of the people is exemplified in the streetcar success, which has surpassed not only our expectations, but is widely reputed to be the most successful streetcar operation in the country. Why shouldn't it be? It's continued to move people, spur economic development downtown. Imagine this, 3.2 million trips on the streetcar in less than 2 years. $2.2 billion in new development since December of 2011 for along the line between Union Station and the River Market area. 66% higher sales taxes collected in the TDD downtown than the previous 2 years. 66%. The rest of the city's up 16%. when you have 3.2 million people being able to hop off, walk in, have a drink, buy something, buy a map, do whatever they want to do and get back on at no cost, it stimulates investment. 80% of the businesses surveyed said that they are realizing higher profits, more demand. They've either increased the number of hours that they're open or hired more people. All of those are good things in my mind. We're not really done yet. We still have to do more. We are going to try to get this extended and get this success throughout the entire city. It's also important from an equity standpoint that we expand east and west. When you look at the city and you take slices of demographics north to south, you get the same demographics north to south until you start moving east to west. What we need to be doing is connecting east and west, because that's where we truly get the integration of people in the city and able to realize the diversity. One thing else about transportation is when we're talking about social and economic and racial equity, one of the very main pillars of creating that equitable environment is transportation. If you can't get around, you can't be around. And it's important that we make sure that people can get around. We also use the technology and data that we collect in our smart city programs to facilitate some of the things that we're doing. One of the programs that we use that we started is KCSTAT. It's a data-driven approach to improve city services, and it's enabled us to make informed decisions utilizing data mining and analysis. We spend taxpayer dollars and money more efficiently. We focus on the services people actually need based on the feedback they provide us in the citizen satisfaction survey. For example, in the case of the GO bond, we picked the things in that GO bond based on the top five or six things that the citizen satisfaction survey had said repeatedly over a number of years. This is what we want to see. Fix the roads, streets, bridges, and sidewalks. Voila. So we did. I'm tired of my house getting flooded. All right. We got that too. I'm disabled. I'm not able-bodied. I can't get into every place. We're addressing that. And for our lovers of dogs, we're building a new animal shelter. Sometimes I think it may look like the Taj Mahal by the time it's all done. I know I'm going to be moving after I'm out of office. I ask them to reserve a couple of kennels for us. When the citizens put it at the top of their priority list, we put it at the top of ours. We're also adding additional tools to that process through our Smart and Connected Cities initiative, and that utilizes data and technology to optimize operational efficiencies, manage city services, and improve citizen engagement. The current footprint of our smart cities technology spans 54 blocks from the World War I Memorial to the River Market and includes 328 Wi-Fi access points and 178 traffic sensors. It is the largest free contiguous Wi-Fi system in the country. This connected infrastructure, and you should never forget that digital connectivity is as important as concrete connectivity. The infrastructure of information is just as important as the infrastructure of movement, and we have to have both. This connected infrastructure allows us to collect real-time data that informs our decision-making and creates an interactive experience for our downtown residents and for visitors. And we're not going to, and we've also developed a pothole prediction algorithm, really cool. You can actually determine based on weather factors, road uses, amount of cars, trucks, et cetera, when the potholes are going to develop, and we can get out there and try and do something about it before they actually do, or as soon as they do so that they don't get bigger. It allows us to be proactive. We have analytic and predictive analytics that allow us to have a very good idea about what water mains need to be replaced so we can replace them before they blow up and tear up the street and do it in a much more systematic way. All of those things save us money, create more efficiency, and utilize our labor in a better and more efficient manner. But we're not just stopping with this type of thing downtown. Like, again, we're trying to create equity across the entire city. We're in the process of deploying the same smart city technology along the Prospect Max line, which should be fully operational within about 2 years. It'll have the same kiosk. It'll have a Wi-Fi system. It'll have the traffic nodes and sensors, and we'll be connected. And then all of a sudden, what we've done is we have actually gone east to west. And then we have the entire middle that is connected together. That's not a bad thing. We're also piloting the world's first connected vehicle fleet operation in partnership with Avis. They'll establish a fleet of 5,000 connected vehicles that will interact with our smart city infrastructure. So these cars will be smarter than us. They won't drive you, but they'll tell you where to go. If you're nice to them, they'll tell you a good place where to go. And our work in smart cities is driving visitors to Kansas City to see what we're doing and how we're doing it. Megan Berry, the mayor of Nashville, who actually grew up out in Overland Park, is a good friend, a great lady, and a good mayor down in Nashville. She was up here a few months ago to look at the streetcar system because they're trying to do that down in Nashville. We have other groups coming into town. We'll have three industry conferences in 2018 that will have at least 20,000 people here to learn about our city and how we do what we do. We are internationally recognized as one of the leading smart cities in the world, and we've received awards from Harvard, from the Edison Awards Foundation, American Public Works, and others. Bob Bennett travels as much as I do sometimes, picking up glass and awards and talking to people about what we do here. It goes to show that integrating existing tools with the new technology, it makes it possible for us to have some impact on the future of this city and where we're going and how we're going to get there. And yet, while we invite progress in some areas of the society, we still find ourselves struggling. This past year, the NAACP issued a travel advisory for Missouri, specifically for African Americans traveling throughout the state. I can't tell you how many calls and emails we got from people, and it was around the time of the eclipse. People calling the office, is it safe to come to Missouri? I heard you guys have problems in Missouri. What's being done about that? And I'm sitting here saying, no, wait a minute. First of all, the real problem started down in Jefferson City when they passed that legislation that makes it darn near impossible to sue successfully for discrimination. That certainly benefits companies. It certainly doesn't benefit people. And then it is true that African Americans in this state are 75% more likely to be stopped by the police than non-African Americans. Those things are true. We have to start dealing with the racial issues in this city in a real way, not in a strange way, in a real way. And I can tell you that we have to deal with those racial issues by simply asking you to do one thing right now. Turn around. Look in this room. Who's not here? Who's not here? When we recognize that people aren't here, and we recognize and understand that people should be here and that we need to work together, then we need to be intentional about making sure that everybody's at the table. It was the first travel advisory of any kind issued at a state, directed at a state like that. We get the benefit of being number one. It certainly wasn't a proud moment for the state, certainly not a proud moment for me, and it doesn't represent who this city is. Doesn't represent who we are. Justice, equality, and fairness are foundational to the future of this city and our community. And in this city, we welcome everyone to our community every day. We do it regardless of color, religion, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, immigration status. None of that stuff matters. What matters is that you come in, you act right, you treat others right, you do your job, you pay your taxes, you take care of your family, you be good citizens. Can't ask much more of that. We shouldn't be discriminating and excluding and treating people differently because of how they look, where they came from, or who they love. And we need to look to our leaders in our businesses and our institutions to reflect that diversity that makes us stronger. I can't tell you, I go to meetings all the time. Frankly, that seems to be almost all that I do. And time after time after time, I find myself sitting in a room populated almost entirely of middle-aged and older white men. I've walked out of meetings. I've told people that until you guys find some age differences, some gender differences, some color differences, I'm not coming back. I've refused to be photographed in those groups of the top 40 or whatever in the magazines, because when I went there, I'd say, where are you telling me that there's no women in the top 40 of anything? There's no African Americans, there's no Latinos in the top 40, the top 50, the top 100, the top whatever? Find them. So in my office, I like to work with men and women. I like to work with people of color, people who have different sexual orientations, people who have different physical capabilities, because in having that mix, we get a very broad discussion base going about what things are important and how we should address issues. I use the power of the station that I have, what little it is, to provide me with the opportunities to talk to people who are often excluded and to talk about people who are always excluded. And one thing I can tell you is, talent is universal, opportunity is not. It's up to all of us to create those opportunities for others. And if we don't do it, nobody else will. And it has to be an individual thing. It can't be, well, I'll wait for somebody to call a meeting. Find somebody, do something. And unless we create pathways to participation and to leadership for the groups that we're talking about, the people who've been traditionally excluded, our community is going to continue to struggle. We are also not just one of the top 10 most violent, we're also listed as one of the top 10 most segregated. That's a shame. So I know this city and I know the people in it, and I know the people in this city have a good heart. But old habits are hard to break. And if you want to break them, you got to set a course. One of the things that we've done is we've worked with the Women's Project, an initiative that was led by, in an initiative led by my office with the Women's Foundation, to help appoint over 50 women to boards and commissions across Kansas City. We created a pathway for them. We now have 42% of the positions on boards and commissions held by women, making city leadership pretty diverse. We have the most diverse TIF commission ever. We have 4 men, 2 women. We have black, white, Hispanic. It's one of the many actions that we've taken. And in today's modern age, we live in a digital community, and that means we have to include people who are not hooked up and connected as well. If we don't have access to a computer or smartphone or a tablet, you're excluded from boundless opportunities. How many people in here have a smartphone on them right now? How many people looked at it before they walked in this room? How many people are going to look at it as soon as they walk out of this room? Now imagine that you don't have it. Imagine that we came and said, everybody leave their smartphones here, and you have no computers at home. What would your day be like? What would your life be like? What would your information flow be like? Last March, we introduced the city's Digital Equity Strategic Plan, aimed at addressing the digital divide, making sure that as many people as possible are connected, because it is absolutely essential in this day and age that you are connected. Too much information flows over the internet and digitally to be left out of that loop. We're just beginning that, though. Last thing I want to get to, values, arts, culture. 4 years ago after, well, it wasn't even 4 years ago, actually. It was right after the first election in 2011 when Mike Burke and I ran against each other, and I asked Mike to take over to create an arts task force designed to look at how we could more strategically move our arts community forward, and he did a great job with that. Commissioned a report that led to a great discussion about 4 years ago about beginning a journey on a citywide arts initiative. And we started that. We wanted a signature arts and music festival to provide artists with more exposure. So this year we announced Open Spaces, a Kansas City arts experience, which will be a 60-day citywide visual and performance art festival. It will open in landscapes for artists. And they'll have the ability to showcase their cutting-edge work at Arts Village, anchored in Swope Park, and all at other locations across the entire city. It will feature local artists, national artists, international artists, all curated by an internationally recognized artistic director, Dan Cameron. And we know that the arts are big in this community. They have the power to capture the past, to challenge the present, and inspire our future. So we're going to take off on that and make it into something great. I have a whole bunch of other stuff here, but Michael has given me the warning. 4 minutes ago, he told me I had 2 minutes. One nice thing about being the mayor, though, you can kind of ignore stuff sometimes. But I do want to talk to you very briefly about developing a strong workforce. That's the strength. That's something that we have to do in this city if we're going to continue to compete for business. We've developed Launch Code, a local nonprofit that helps people whose jobs have become obsolete to learn how to code so that they can get back into the workforce. We have Tech Hire, a multi-sector effort to create pathways to well-paying technology jobs by expanding learning pathways for people and bringing hiring practices and focusing on inclusivity. In 2017, we matched 85 youth to summer internships and 300 youth to seasonal employment, keeping them out of trouble through our Hire KC Youth program. And we're continuing to build that. We're trying to give people the tools to work and to focus and to develop the resources to be contributing members of this community and make this city better. So when we talk about Kansas City, we're talking about more than a place. What we're really talking about are the people and the people that make up this city. And despite our differences, we have come together on time and time again to take steps to do those things that are necessary to improve this city through education and equity and infrastructure and culture. We are going to build our airport. We are going to maintain our bridges. We're going to continue to build on our streetcar, but we're also going to continue to teach our children and make them proficient readers and to give them hope so that they can succeed. We're going to continue to win tournaments and cups and championships and World Series sometime. We're going to have masterpieces in art and music, but we're doing everything that we do, everything that I do, every focus that I have is focused on one thing, making this city better by working with people who agree to do exactly the same thing. That's why we succeeded in the past, and that's why we're going to succeed in 2018. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. So, first question.
Since the federal government has seemingly turned away from climate issues,
yes,
could you talk a little bit about what Kansas City has done and is continuing to do in relation to responding to what part cities can contribute in
sure.
a positive way?
Sure. Michael told me that if there were a lot of people, I needed to be short, and if there weren't, I could be eloquent. And I told him it would probably be easier for me to be eloquent than short. But I was one of the original climate mayors with the U.S. Conference of Mayors. We have recommitted to the Paris Accords. We have committed to some other accords internally with U.S. Conference. On the city level, we continue to be very progressive with regards to use of alternative fuels, with regards to decreasing our electric footprint. We are the KCPL's largest customer. And we have taken steps with our lighting processes, et cetera, to reduce that footprint significantly. We have a city engaged energy system with private business and other governmental agencies to make sure that our buildings are efficient. We have improved our efficiency in City Hall, for example, by 97%. And we continue to do all of those things. We are fortunate to have a tremendous environmental office with Dennis Murphy in Kansas City, and he is one of the leaders. And Kansas City is recognized as one of those cities that is doing a lot in terms of trying to make sure that we reduce our footprint. Further, We will see more additions of natural gas vehicles, for example. We will also start to see more attempts to get people off the road in cars and into public transit, but we have to build the public transit before we can do it. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much, Mayor, for being here today. By trade, I'm an economist, and I just wanted to give you an observation. When we were in the World Series, during that whole time frame, there were no killings in the city. Just a comment.
Well, you take 800 people, which is about double the population of the city, and put them in one place, that's not bad. Not only were we not, didn't we see any killings, we only had 4 arrests during that entire time. So it can be done. But, you know, unfortunately, we can't have a World Series parade every day. We'd like to. It would be pretty cool. But that can't be the only reason that we reduce crime. And that can't be the only time. Yes, ma'am.
I have 2 questions for you. The first is that the last time I saw you speak, you vowed that Kansas City would remain a sanctuary city. Do you still stand by that?
Actually, I've never vowed that Kansas City would remain a sanctuary city. What I've said is Kansas City will always welcome everybody. The use of the term sanctuary city is fraught with all sorts of political and legal issues with both the state of Missouri and with the federal government. So I've always believed that I don't care what you name it, because the name isn't important. What's important is how you treat people, and we're going to treat people just like those people in sanctuary cities do.
Thank you.
Sure. My that was question, number one. All right.
My other question has to do with the River Market and with the new free...
streetcar?
Yes, thank you. Sorry.
Yeah.
They're going to start charging people to park at the city market.
Okay.
My worry about this is that many of the people who work downtown make very little money working there, but have to pay quite a bit in order to park there. A lot of the people taking the streetcar are taking it because they can now park at the city market for free and allow themselves to make more money working downtown. Is anything being done to help those people?
Which people are we helping?
The people who are currently using that area as a free parking zone and taking the streetcar to get to work.
Well, the reason that they're charging for parking is because they're trying to discourage people from taking the free parking, because the people in the River Market were upset that people were using the parking. So based on interacting with the parking authorities, et cetera, that's what they've come up with. We're never going to please everybody. But what people have done is they saw free parking, they parked their car there all day long, which inhibits the traffic and the business opportunities for the businesses in the River Market, and they hop on the streetcar and do their thing. And that's cool. That's what we want them to do. But we can't have them doing that to the detriment of the businesses in the River Market. And they were the ones that were complaining. So it wasn't something that we came up on. And in terms of what they make downtown, we don't have any control over that. Here's the thing. This is exactly why we need a more extensive transportation system. Because first mile, last mile is the problem in transportation. That first mile, getting from your home to transit. If we had an extensive transportation system where you could leave your car at home and hop on transit and get to where you need to go, we wouldn't have these problems. But we're about 25 years behind some of the other cities in terms of transit. So we're learning some things as we go forward. We're making some course corrections as we go. But some of those things are a little bit painful for people, and I get it. But we just don't have the ability to get that first mile, last mile taken care of yet. And when we're able to get that done, then I think that the parking issues will ease. The other thing, too, is that we're developing some apps, and it works downtown, where we have an app that shows you where parking is, so you can go there and park. That's not necessarily working down at the River Market necessarily because of the business clusters there that need that parking space for transient customers. So when we can figure out a better way, then we'll do that, because nobody's out there to infringe on people's earnings by making them pay for parking any more than necessary. But another thing, too, go to Chicago, New York, L.A., park there. Bring your mortgage payment. Because that's what it is. All in all, we're doing all right around here in terms of parking. We're not even close to charging what other cities charge for parking. And thank God. Yes, sir.
First, Semper Fi.
Semper Fi, brother. Hoorah. Always a Marine.
Combat. I hear it's under attack in some way, and I thought it was one of the more successful programs. Could you briefly tell our colleagues here what combat is and what are the issues?
Well, can I just defer on that, because I have zero desire to get into the county's mess. That's a county issue.
I know it's a county issue, but it's been a real savior for a lot of kids.
It has done some good stuff. I don't want to weigh in on that while the legislature and the county executive are fighting each other, because I don't want anything that I said being interpreted as being on one side or the other. But combat itself is a fund that provides funding and resources to people who are doing certain things to combat crime. For example, we get a combat grant with TNT, with our Teens in Transition program. They issue grants. There's been controversy around combat for quite some time, and it's like anything else. Anytime there's a pool of money, there's going to be people trying to find ways to manipulate that fund in some way that they rather manipulate it. So I was going to say with all due respect, but when people say with all due respect, that means that they don't really have any respect. So I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say, if you will allow me to dodge the bullet of getting involved in a political argument that I'm not wanting to be involved in, that would be great. But combat program itself has some good advantages. Whether or not it needs to be tweaked, whether or not it needs to be changed in control, who should control the money, I don't know. That's a problem for the county.
Just one comment on that. Stacy Daniels, who's head of that, is one of the smartest people I know professionally.
I agree. I know Stacy. I've known her for years. But I think that Stacy stepped out.
Oh, did she?
I think so, yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a while back. I think I went to a party for that. But I go to so many parties with so many people stepping down like him.
Was there an implication from an potential incoming company, corporation, that the research facilities at UMKC were somehow not measuring up?
I don't think it was that, put in that negative way.
Well,
what it was, hey, you go to Columbus and there's Ohio State. You go to Nashville, and there's Vanderbilt. You go out to the Boston area, you've got MIT, you got Harvard, you got Mass, you got all sorts of different stuff. What is, seems to be common in the cities that they selected are that in those cities, there are major universities there. They have functional international airports. They have good transportation systems for the most part. And they have a higher concentration of tech-related jobs. Those are some of the things that we believe were deficiencies in what we were offering. And those are the things that we have to improve if we're going to compete on that level.
I was hearing research.
Yep, research that. Facilities are definitely something they're looking for. But they're looking, when they look, and I don't know exactly what all their thought processes is. All we know is that we've gotten a little feedback. And that's one of the things that we've heard a little bit of, is that they were looking at cities that within their city had major research institutions.
So I guess then the question is, how do they define major? Because I didn't know. Was there a specific arena that, you know, was not measuring up, or was it just a general broad statement?
Well, I don't know how they're measuring major, but I can tell you, if you look at the cities that they've selected, that they, if you look at those entities that are in those cities, those entities are well known across the country, whereas we do not have that same stature in the eyes of some people. That's all. I don't want to say it's negative for the school, but the bottom line is that Ohio State, Harvard, Vanderbilt, University of Texas at Austin, those are institutions that we do not have here in Kansas City. Yes, ma'am.
While recognizing that things have to be paid for, nonetheless, it seems that in Kansas City, there's a tendency to default to a special tax, an increase in the sales tax for a particular geographic area, or a few years ago, there was a proposal for a sales tax increase for medical research, translational medical research at three institutions, and there are other a patchwork, if you will, of taxes. You know, if you go to the plaza to eat, you're going to pay a little bit more because there's a tax related to that. Do you think this tendency to default to increasing a tax here, there, there is a problem for Kansas City?
No. And I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Do you want the stuff that you're able to get or not? I'm sorry, and I'll be blunt about it. There ain't nothing for free. You want good roads? Concrete costs, and the costs go up. It's not like being an individual. If I need to increase my house income, I can go out and get a part-time job. City can't get a part-time job. The cost goes up. The population base is only marginally increasing. The amount of tax that we pay is not nearly as much as the amount of tax paid elsewhere. I would refer everyone to the Citizens Commission on Municipal Revenue, where they looked at our tax base and what it is and compared us to other cities. What we don't see is that in other cities, they can charge higher fees. You want to get your car registered in L.A.? Get ready to pay something. We don't do that here. We can't because of the state law. So if we could do things that had fee-bearing implications as opposed to tax-bearing implications, we would. But by and large, we're not that high of a tax relative to other cities. In other cities where they are definitely relying on property taxes as opposed to sales taxes, property tax values are sky high. We're not like that. We have lower property taxes. We have to continue to do the things that keep this city running. 318 square miles, 6,300 lane miles of road. When it snows, we plow two lanes of road from Boston to San Diego and back to Boston every time it snows. We have 3,800 miles of underground piping. That stuff breaks. It's been there since the early 80s or 1880s. And downtown, when Power and Light was built, they pulled wooden sewers out of the ground, and people were yelling about the cost of Power and Light. The cost of Power and Light wasn't the cost of building Power and Light as much as it was making sure that the infrastructure under it was functional. This is a big landmass that has a lot of needs. We have a density of 1,460 people per square mile in Kansas City compared to 38,000 per square mile in Manhattan. And we have the same type of infrastructure. $1 from each person in Manhattan for infrastructure is a lot more than $1 from each person in Kansas City for the same mile of infrastructure. So the choice in my mind is pretty good. We have to learn, first of all, we can't wait for the state government or federal government. They're not going to help us. They haven't been helping us. How many times have we heard about federal infrastructure plans? Where's the federal infrastructure plan? If we don't take care of our stuff, we aren't going to find anybody else to do it. The reason we have to spend money to take care of the Buck O'Neill Bridge before it falls into the river is because the state doesn't have the money to do it. And we aren't going to allow ourselves to be trapped in a situation where that bridge is closed for 2 years because the state didn't have the money. So it's very simple in my mind. If we want to continue to build this city and to have the city that we're proud of and to do the things that people want to do in this city and to have access to the types of things that are available, then we need to understand that those things have to be paid for, and that's what we have to do. Also, just the last thing, budget's coming up.
Real quick,
I will. Budget's coming up. 78% of the general fund budget is being spent on public safety. 78%. That's fire, police, and ambulance. That leaves us 22% to do everything else. So, yeah, we have to do certain things in order to make sure we can do everything else. Thank you for listening. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Mayor, we have our UU All Souls Forum mug to give you as a thank you gift.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And again, please thank the mayor for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. See you next week.
Thanks for listening. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's presentation, The State of the City Address with Mayor Sly James. This program was recorded Sunday, January 21st at All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church. All Souls Forum is edited and produced for broadcast by Christina Frazier. Our theme song was composed, performed, and recorded by musician Fred Potter. This program will be available for podcast within one day of broadcast on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. Remember, you can also find archived All Souls podcasts and many other interesting and enlightening public affairs programs produced by KKFI on the KKFI website. Thanks for joining us this evening, and we hope you tune in next week, same time, same place, when we will continue the conversation here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's community radio station.